right? To use our time well, we will give it a start. Thank you so much for joining the seminar. So much content during a conference like this. So much to really comprehend, isn't it? But I just came today, but I'm amazed about how things seem to connect quite well. So even what we just heard now, I felt like, oh, this seems to connect really, really well. But what we're going to do now is to focus on how to start a STEPS course in a local church. And that's what I'm going to say a little bit about. And Simon is going to second me, and he will interrupt me when I'm saying something rubbish or not understandable because of my heavy Danish accent or things like that. So good that you are here, Simon. So just to say a few things before I kind of dive into the actual presentation. On the one hand, you will find out it's extremely easy to start a STEPS course in a local setting. We have been developing the courses over 18 years, and there's been an acceleration of development over the past 6 years. So basically, it's a fully developed course. Basically, everything from the moment you open up a session, there's a script for everything. You don't have to invent one word if you don't want to. So it's kind of fully equipped with films, books, comms, everything you can think of. And everything is made available. Everything is for free. So in that sense, it's extremely easy. We also offer, if you want to have a soft start in a local setting, you can simply just join one of our online tandem courses. So all you need from a local setting is simply two people who would say, well, I would like to run a group like that. Then we do the rest. We train them. We give you the comms to use on Sundays if you want to. And then we host the course. We do all the technical stuff. We basically do everything. So your two local people, they will, of course, be there for the local group. They will be their connection point. We won't. And then there will be local stories. There will be a local experience of how does this work. And then you can get going. In that sense, really, really easy, so to speak. On the other hand, it's not easy. So if you as a leader say, well, we need something like that. Sounds interesting. Let's do it just on top of everything else. So we'll squeeze it in here. That typically doesn't go well. It does take some focus. It does take some attention. It does take some nervous, probably the wrong word, but still, I think you know what I mean, right? So when you start, for example, an alpha course, hopefully there's some nerve. We need people to join. We need to pray for it. We can't take it for granted. God, you need to step in. You need to intervene. We follow it as it continues and so on and so forth. I don't know if you run alpha courses, but that was just what I was thinking of. Other things like that where we know we can't just assume that it will just sort it out by itself. It really does take attention. It does take care. It needs prayer. This week, we had Monday, we had prayer and fasting because we have a step 5 day happening this Saturday. So we have learned we need to pray. We need really to be on it and we need to be really focused for it to really succeed. And that actually has been our experience. So the places where churches have adopted it and where leaders, whether it's pastors or other leaders, have really taken it in like this, and we really want to focus, we really need to do this well, it's almost always going really well. We almost always get really strong feedback. And most of those churches, they run it regularly. But I have also seen churches where it was squeezed in. And it just, oh, by the way, we also need to do this. And on top of everything else. And typically, it doesn't go very well. Just to say. I'm a Dane, so we say things right quite directly. I hope that's okay in the southern UK. But it's just really how it works. And Simon, you can comment on that later, whether you agree or not. But that's just been our experience. And probably it's my fault when it's not been happening as it should some places. Maybe I have presented it as if it's, you could just do this with your left hand, or right hand if you're left-handed. So you know, so I take some of the responsibility on myself, and therefore it's actually important for me to start like this. So we kind of know, if you choose to do this, on the one hand, it's really, really easy, probably the easiest thing in terms of organization that you have ever done, if you do it, if you make use of our help, of course, which is totally up to you whether you want to do that or not. But on the other hand, it does really take care to do it well, also because, as you will find out, the steps process, it goes really deep. Some of the deepest things happening in my experience is happening on a steps course. Right. Have I scared you away or still there? Great, good. So these are some of the things that people work on typically on a steps course: low self-esteem, lack of boundaries, guilt, lack of self-care, pride, need for affirmation, isolation, procrastination, self-doubt, alcohol, chemical addiction, dishonesty, disordered eating, people-pleasing, workaholism, pornography, fear of failure, excessive need for financial security, jealousy, low self-worth, anger, fear of rejection, need to control, and the list is way longer than that. So everything repetitive in our lives that we are really sick and tired of repeating itself. So a good kind of measuring stick, is that a word? A good way of measuring it is, at least I found that, I was praying, I still remember walking around in my living room, and then I was like, God, I almost don't want to pray about this again, because I've prayed over it so many times. And I'm so tired of this has happened again. So now I'm here again. Anyone recognize? Yeah. That is a good measure. I've been thinking like that about myself again. I've been really hard on myself again, or whatever it is. It's happened again, and I'm so tired of it. So all of those repetitive things. With some of these things, we have found that we need to work with it more specifically than we do on a general course. So for example, now we do particular groups for men who works on pornography. They're simply more helped if they are in a group together, and where we have also added some extra materials for the process. It's just been an experience, so now we do that. Disordered eating, we have developed a special course for disordered eating, which is 6 sessions. And then they very often go directly to a steps course to continue their work, but they start on a 6-session course directly on disordered eating. And we have done the same on anxiety. So there is some development going on with some of these areas, but with most of it, it's all mixed in one group. So in group I'm sitting in right now, an international group in Copenhagen, almost all of these things, and many of these things, they're just happening in the same group. So these are the areas, very quickly. The vision and goal of STEPS is actually from what we heard this talk. So we are on the same page. It's to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and a recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free. So I was, you know, you kind of know as a leader we need to have a vision, that's otherwise people would say, what are you about? And I was a bit like, so what is it? And I was trying to think about some very clever sentences that would impress people, but it didn't get anywhere. And then walking on a beach one day during lockdown, actually, I was like, so what is it really I see you do, Jesus? What is it really that is happening when we are on these steps courses? And this scripture came to mind. And I realized, well, that's what we are about, being a small part of this. not we are all of this. We'd be a small part of this, but this is kind of the category where we find ourselves. These are the sort of things people would reply back and say, we find ourselves now on a journey towards freedom. Our eyes have been opened. I've just heard those stories today, coming from a steps group this morning. Some of them said things like that. So that's typically what we hear from people. So this seems to be, for us at least, the right vision to work on. So what is the course? Well, it's a 12-step course. We are using the same steps as in the traditional steps groups. Originally, they come from a Christian context, and if you want to hear more about the theological story, the spiritual story behind the 12 steps, we are doing an online seminar in 3 or 4 weeks or so, which you can find on our webpage, stepscourse.org. It's just 1 hour where you can dial in if you're interested, and then I'll kind of go through, this is the whole background. This is where they came from, these 12 steps originally. This is not something we claim, it's something they say themselves. We didn't find out really for ourselves. We took it all from, and that would be the Oxford groups. So something very related to the spiritual story of the UK as well. So those steps are kind of the framework that we go through, and then we use the biblical stories to illuminate. So what are these steps? What are the spiritual principles at play? And there's really nothing new in it. Those of you who are pastors, preachers, teachers, you would probably have done all the talks already, I assume. I had, before I even encountered this program. So it's a normal Christian stuff, but it's put into a framework, into a context that helps people to be really focused and encounter God in exactly the very difficult place that they are working with in their lives. So, and then for those of you who were there this morning, I mentioned the four big headlines. It's about finding peace with God. That is the kind of the first big thing, the first three steps. Then the next steps are about finding peace with ourselves. Part of those steps is to do an inventory where we ask ourselves the question, so how has my behavior harmed my relationship to God, myself, and to other people? So it's built on Psalm 139. So again, really well-known stuff. Basically, we are asking God, God, would you search my heart? Would you search me with this that I'm working on? And would you let me know what's been going on? A tough prayer to pray. So we are right there. That is the step I have been working on. I was doing that exercise Tuesday this week. So if my skin is a little thin, you know why? I have just been through that stuff. At step five, we confess to God, to ourselves, and to another person. And that is very often, you could say, the centerpiece of the process. I could talk a lot about confession, but some of you may have noticed that more and more people talk about the power of confession. I've never heard as many leading teachers, Christian teachers, talk about confession as I do today. It's quite interesting. It's almost like we are rediscovering the power of confession. So in this context, we actually have a, you could say, a framework where it becomes natural to do it, a process that leads into it. So on step five, we take typically a step five day, which would be half of a Saturday. In the old days when we started it, it was a whole weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. As you would know, you can't do that any longer. It's become impossible. But now we do it on one day, which also seems to work. And that day, we give people the opportunity, if it's a in-person course, to go to a room and give their confession to one of the group leaders or group facilitators. And then we end the day by talking about why is forgiveness a reality. And it's a very simple, straightforward journey where we look at what was it actually that Jesus did on the cross. And what is the big trade-off at the cross? What is it that we can put down at the cross? And what is it that Jesus gives back to us? That is a big thing we do there. And then we actually do something with what we have confessed. We typically, if it's possible, we burn it. We burn the piece of paper, and it's quite amazing to be part of that, actually. Some write it on a stone, and they throw it in a sea, if that's applicable to where they are. Online, we have had to just do so, you know, crumble the paper, do something else, or just tear it apart. But we find ways of kind of saying, we believe that it's done, that forgiveness is a reality. And then we offer people prayer. And interestingly, the on-church people, they are often the first one coming for prayer. They are just ready when we get to that point. And it's amazing to see when people have been through, or when we have been through a day like that, how soft our hearts are for the work of the Holy Spirit. So we see people being set free from demons, people being set free from addictions and other things, things that they didn't even pray for. They come back with stories about how they experienced deliverance. There's really power in that day, basically because there's power in the gospel. And here there is a very strong focus on this is the gospel. This is what Jesus has done. This is what it produces in our lives. Does that make any sense? Great. Then how does it work? Well, before I say anything to add, Simon, up to this point?
I just want to, just a bit about this kind of confession. I think growing up in kind of, I didn't grow up in New Frontiers Church or anything like that, and I think coming into it was like talking about accountability and the invitation into confession is a profound thing, versus kind of potentially being forced into accountability. So confession is a means of grace to us to come to Jesus and choose, or to come to somebody else as a representative of Christ to us and choose to share these things is a powerful thing, versus sometimes accountability where I'm going to ask you the hard question and basically you can choose whether you lie or not. And depending on how deep that relationship is, but I think the power of that is a special thing, and it's not unique to Steps, but like Lars has said, building to that point where actually the invitation is there, is a really helpful thing, that also knowing you are doing that journey with other people who are also choosing to share that, and just starting each week, each session, and each time you go around the group by saying my name is this person and I'm working on this thing, is confessing straight away to one another. And as we do that, like I said earlier, like Jesus is faithful. And he does forgive us of our sins and he will cleanse us from all unrighteousness. So it's taking him at his word. And so, yeah, I just think that's really powerful.
Thanks so much. Yeah. So that is a confession. And from there, we go into the actual behavior. And we are asking two questions, basically. What can I do to change the behavior? Is there anything I can do? If there is, what is that? And then the other thing we do is that we leave to God what only he can do, which is the transformation of our character. So we ask the question, what character defect is behind behavior I have? And then we use that to ask God to intervene and work there in our lives. So it's basically a very deep sort of surrendering, because we know now what it is we surrender. So the, typically for many of us, there's a lot of unknown stuff that has surfaced at this point, and things have become more particular. So we now are aware of, at least more aware of what's really going on there. Something that we felt dis-ease about or discomfort about early on, but now it's become particular, and we have a particular prayer to pray. So those of you who really like theology and so on, Romans 6 and 7 is really the theological stuff behind steps 6 and 7. They coincide, so to speak. So the steps journey, steps 6 and 7, is a practical way of acting on Romans 6 and 7. So there's an interesting Bible study for you. I once, when I realized it, I poured it out over a poor call, so they were totally, you know, it was way too much. But it's great. It's a great Bible study if you love that kind of thing. And then we go from there to finding peace with others. And most people, when they start the course, they are like, I will never go to these people and say, you know, make amends and say, I'm sorry. It's too shameful. It's like, we don't do that stuff. But when you get that far in the process, you actually are, I want to do that. Now I'm ready for it. It's a very, and we help people, both in terms of finding out, so who do I go to, how far, what am I ready for, and how to do it in a good way so you don't harm yourself or harm any others. So there's a lot of advice given around that. And then basically the last steps are about how do we maintain peace? How do we live in a new sort of way so we don't fall back to our old ways of rescuing ourselves? Because basically that's typically what's going on in our lives. That is, we're trying to rescue ourselves with some unhelpful things. That's how we operate as human beings. So how do I avoid going back to that and stay on a healthy path? That is what the last steps are about, a healthy lifestyle. And you would recognize all of it when, if I kind of went into it and say, this is what that is. So then how does it work practically? So there are 12 short films, one for each step. Then there is a manual, a steps book. It's available, I saw down there at the table. So if you want one, you can buy one down there. And that's basically it. So people would, number one, come for an introduction. So we say to people, you can't sign up for a steps course. That's impossible. But you can sign up for an introduction to find out whether this is the right thing for you. And we try to be very real at the introductions and say, this may not be the right thing for you right now. So, but if you are sufficiently motivated, then this might really make a huge difference in your lives, because that is the stories of ourselves and the stories of so many other people at this point. And then at the end of the introduction, people can go for a personal talk or in a breakout room if it's online and have a short conversation about whether they want to go or not, or what they want to work on. So they have been equipped by watching an introduction film and us giving some introduction as well. So there's a lot of information given. So basically, they are told everything they need to know before they come for that short conversation. So for those who then decide to join, well, that's where the journey begins. They will read the first a chapter. Each week, there is one chapter for each step. And in the chapter, you will find content, of course. This is what it's about. These are the biblical principles. This is an exercise that you can do. And these are the questions that would be helpful for you to reflect on. So typically for most people, that would take 45 minutes to an hour, I think. We are all different, but thereabouts. Less than 30 minutes, then you are really doing it quickly and maybe not very thoroughly. I'm distracted now because I'm thinking of guys' groups. The guys, they do 20 minutes just before the group starts, very typically. So that's always a bit of a training. Guilty as charged. Anyways, so we encourage people to take time and also to do it not straight before the session, but have time to work with it during the week. And then when they come for the session, they have already watched the film, typically, and then there is some hosting. We would typically do that when it's us hosting it, or in a local setting, they would then know how to host. They could use the script that we have provided. And then people are together in a group, typically around 6 to 8 people. It can go down to 4, that's a low number. It can go up to 12, that's a high number. It seems like the optimal number is around 8. And what they do in that group is simply to, the leader of the group would read some guidelines and say, these are the guidelines for the group. And they would read it every time. So people kind of know, this is how we are together in this group. So here's a few of the guidelines. One is, we don't speak for more than 3 minutes at a time. I love that rule. Yeah. We should have that in community groups as well, right? And we don't speak about others. We only speak about ourselves. That is also a very good rule. And we don't comment on one another. We don't give advice to one another. So we are basically saying, we are speaking to ourselves, about ourselves, and to God, and the rest are just allowed to listen. And if you haven't been in anything like that before, you might rightfully ask, as I did, what on earth is that? How can that even work? It's amazing how the Holy Spirit works in that area. And then after having read the guidelines, the group facilitator would always be the first one to start. And the level of honesty and vulnerability in the group is always decided by the group facilitator. I know that from my own experience. If I hold back, the rest of the group, they will hold back. But if I'm honest about, well, this is me, this is my stuff, there you go. The rest of the group follows. It's just how it works. So we lead really by example. We don't invent anything, but we are honest about the actual state of how is it going with the area that I'm working on right now in this process. That's really what we do. So I would always start by saying, if it's me facilitating the group, as I did this morning, I would say, my name is Lars, and I'm working on anger. And then I would start to reflect on one of the questions. And I wouldn't be looking at the rest of the group, because if I did, I would start to look for their reactions and do they understand what I'm saying? And that would actually detract me from observing what is God doing and what is actually happening as I am reflecting this in this way in this group. It's easy online, then I just look a little bit over the screen and they can't really tell that I'm not looking at them. When we do it in person, we typically sit around a table and have a candlelight or a flower in the middle. So there is another thing to look at. And again, it's strange. I know it's very different from what we do, but it's really powerful. It's a different dynamics. So that is the group. This is what we do. Originally, we did it for 12 weeks. Now we are experimenting because for some people who have never been on steps before, they say, 12 weeks, that's a very long time. So we are experimenting now. So right now we have some good experiences with running it for 10 weeks. So that is what we're doing at the moment, and it seems to go really well. But we actually have three versions. We have a 9-week model, we have a 10-week model, and we have a 12-week model. So people can pick and choose whatever they have faith for. That's a lot of information. Are you still there? Yeah.
Yes.
There's a bit of history. We can do that for those of you who are interested. I can do it more when I do the online session. I don't want to spend time on that now, I think. But lots of people have been on it, and there's a lot of feedback, both in the UK, Denmark, and we are in 5 different nations. And what we find is that steps is for all. And of course, given that I have been in the process for so many years, I have been sitting with all sorts of people. One of my most interesting groups, I think, was a group where we were 12 guys. On my right hand was one of the leading police officers in Denmark. This was in Denmark at the time. He was known publicly because he was often, you know, interviewed on television. On my left side was an active addict who was very criminal to kind of make sure that he could keep on his addiction. And there were times when the addict spoke where I was like, does this guy need to arrest him now? Because, you know, in front of me was a CEO of one of the major energy companies in Denmark. So you kind of have, and if you spoke to those guys at the end of the course, they were like brothers. They were like friends. And what they all discovered, what I discovered, is we have so much in common. There's so much humanity in this room. And we allow ourselves to be normal human beings struggling with life. Because we all do. That's just the thing, isn't it? We may have a few periods in our lives where we're like, oh, everything is well. But then they rarely last long. Then we are into whatever's going on because life changes all the time, doesn't it? So it's for all. So I have, let's see if we succeed with this. Yeah. Hope you can hear this.
My wife did it.
And then she was gently encouraging me to do it.
She was gently encouraging me over an intense period of time.
So I decided to do steps because I wanted to unlearn some very unhelpful patterns that I had noticed in my life.
I was struggling with excessive anger for a while, and I had really tried so many different things. And when steps came up, it just felt like it was the right thing at the right time.
I settled on perfectionism, which, as a true perfectionist, didn't feel like quite the right word to describe what the problem was.
I didn't know why I wanted to do steps. I knew there was this mental block, but I didn't know what it was. So I was having doubts, I was having fears, I was having anxieties. And then as I did steps, I was able to uncover that it was a fear of rejection.
The whole setup of you just talk and no one talks back, I actually loved that.
It was good because as you're speaking and as you're listening to other people, you're working your way through the problem. I found that really helpful because I was like, this is a really encouraging environment without it being cheesy or, you know, someone giving me some left field idea about how I should tackle my issue.
I think the most challenging week for me was the week that we had to make amends. because it's all well and good to admit to yourself the areas that you failed, but then to go to someone who you care about and ask for their forgiveness was very, very difficult, but it was also incredibly freeing. The burden that I felt lifted off the back of that, that just for me in that moment made the whole step process worth it.
Just hearing each other and knowing you were heard connected us in a way you don't really connect with people like that ever, I don't think there's a format that's like that.
You don't feel judged, you don't feel like you're on show or anything like that. It's just a group of very similar people working on very similar things.
You don't kind of realise the impact Steps has as you do it. It's only like a year later you can kind of look back and say, that was a kind of a line in the sand. It was a moment when I exposed my vulnerabilities and admitted my struggles, and life has been so much different since then.
I don't really get into like a rage so much anymore. I think there's definitely like way more peace in the house.
It was a really good process. It was very challenging. But the great thing is, since the process, I can now tackle these other problems and I have a structure to do it in that I know will help.
Everyone. We're all human. We all have habits and insecurities that we wish were different, we wish we didn't have. And I think we can all imagine a life for ourselves that is more true and more beautiful than the one we currently have. So if that's you, then Steps is for you.
Right. Oh, let's see if I can get this back again. Oh, what's happening there? And as you can see, we make surveys. After a Steps course, we ask people, and these are anonymous, so, and we really ask them to give honest answers, and we don't know who says what. So we do believe we can rely pretty much on these statements from different people. So you can just, I'm not going to repeat them, but you can just see them on the screen. So bottom line is we get really good feedback. What I feel like after 18 years of doing this that I can say with confidence to people is that if you go on a Steps course, if you're motivated to work on a specific area, if you do what is suggested, if you read the book, if you do the exercises, reflect on the questions, come for the sessions, then it will make a difference in your life. I can't say that you will be totally transformed by week 12. Some do experience that. Some say it's been life transforming and they are blown away. Some have experienced that already at step 3 or 4. We never quite know when it happens. For others, they would say it's been an incremental process. And some, I had one saying to me after a course, I really don't know if it made a difference. And she had done all of that, but then she came to me 3 months after, said it really made a difference. Mm-hmm. It just took time for her to get into situations of life where she could see that she simply reacted differently. Does that make sense? So we do see that Steps is for all, particularly pastors. I've had a lot of them over the past years. And as you can see, I am in the process myself and have been for a long time. So now I'm probably in, how do I move on? Can you can see that one there, but I can't see it on.
Just try your arrow key.
Oh, I have lost my arrow. Oh, right. Steps and mission. This is a, I can see that I am starting to be a bit out of time. So let me just say, we see a number of unchurched people coming on the Steps courses. Not all of them find faith. Nearly all of them, they move closer to a decision of faith. And some of them find faith. The story here is a story of one of those people. So she found faith, she found community, and she's now a Steps facilitator. She's actually taking it with her. She has moved to the US and is about to start a course there. So it's one of those stories. And we have a number of those stories. We have whole families who have come to faith because one of them started on a Steps course. So beautiful stories like that. And if you ask, so what is the missional kind of attraction here. And I would put it like this, that if you compare to alpha, for example, an alpha course would often be for people who are curious about the big questions of life. They want to know, is it true with the Christian claims? Things like that. That would often kind of get them to an alpha course. It's not that kind of people who would then go, unchurched people who would go on a steps course. That would be more people saying, I have this thing going on in my life. I'm sick and tired of it, and I need help. So if you can help me, well, all right, I will take the Christian stuff. But help is what I need, and help is what I want. And I've heard about it somewhere. And quite many people actually have some kind of trust in the steps process because they have heard about it from the traditional groups, and they have heard about how it has helped people. So when they now hear about that there is a process for all kinds of people, not only addicts, they are like, oh, that might actually be for me. So it's not a difficult invite, we have found. And sometimes in some churches, they have actually found it easier to invite for this sort of thing than alpha in periods. And then it changes again. But just to say, there is a missional aspect of it as well. And then we have seen more and more the discipleship aspect also. So this is a story about that, that you're not going to hear because I want to have some time for Q&A. So, but it's a good story, I can promise you. And these are people from a church where Steps has been running for 6 or 7 years. And it's simply become a way of doing discipleship. So there's a whole group of people who would regularly go back and do it again, to continue their journey and to stay in an awareness of how do I maintain and develop my peace with God, with myself, and with others. And in a way, you could say that it's a practical way of following what Paul says when he says, therefore, be aware of how you live. This is a practical way of doing it. There are many other ways, but this, we know, is a practical way. And for many people, that's what they say. I need to do that regularly, I have found, because it builds on previous processes. I'm not repeating it, but it grows. So I maintain and I develop what I have experienced. And of course, I myself would be consider myself part of that group. So that is a growing thing that we see more and more of. So here's the toolbox. So the things that we kind of make available for you, as I said, it's all for free. We have a website, stepscourse.org, where we have a what we call a sign-in section. All you need to do is give your email address, that's all. And then you have access to the sign-in section where we have a dashboard. So you can simply write in the date when you plan to start the course. Then it gives you everything that you need week by week, both in terms of comms, emails that you might want to send to the participants week by week, basically everything you need. You just get given when you do that. There's, of course, also a facilitator manual, which is quite comprehensive, and everything basically is covered in the manual. We do also training, facilitator training, typically two or three times a year. It's online, so it's accessible for everyone, and we have people mainly from the UK, but also from other nations joining. We do online seminars once in a while, like the one I just talked about, where we will do some dive into the history of Steps. And then we have support, a support system. So everyone running a Steps course will be offered a coach. It's up to the church or the leaders whether they want to receive it or not. But we would say we strongly encourage that. So going back to the beginning, what I said about the courses that didn't go well, that would be one of the things that they didn't use that offer. What we encourage is to have very regular contact with a Steps coach when you do the course for the first time. And maybe also for the second time, because things change and new things come up. And it's just helpful to talk to someone who has a lot of experience with these courses. And then we have these, what we call tandem support options, where we basically do everything. All you do is to come with two group leaders and do the comms in your church so people can sign up. Then we, with the sign-up form, which we also provide, your church name will come up, so people will be asked, what church do you come from? They click your church, and then they will be put into that group with the leaders that you have appointed and that you follow up on. But we also follow up from our side in terms of you could say, technical training about how do you run a steps group, so on and so forth. And then we have steps network, so to speak. We really want to be there for one another, and we are. So we talk to one another across nations, across also denominations. For example, in Denmark right now, we are running sometime every year an online steps course where several church denominations go together, and it's actually quite lovely. It's quite beautiful. No one thinks about who are you from or where. They sit with their own groups, but we are facilitating it together. So we are all in the same room when we do the hosting and so on and so forth. We are all seeing each other as we go through the step 5 day. It's a lovely day, a lovely way of actually doing something ecumenical and still maintain your own identity in the midst of it all. Very quickly, we have a lot of steps development going on, a digital app which is developed and will be continued to be developed. So it's all accessible on an app, the English text and audio and the rest of it. Some people don't like books any longer, so now they can get it on an app. We have a youth steps course, so it should actually be young adults because it's from the age 16 to 21, which we have translated at this point, and we are right now seeking funding to fully develop it and to make films so we can reach that group. We have been asked by quite a number of people whether we could do something there because we know that the need is very big and it's just growing in terms of young people dealing with anxiety and work dealing with low self-worth and fear of rejection and the rest of it. We are really in a social media response situation here. And STEPS really works for those areas. We know that. It's been tested in Denmark and with really good results. Then we have the short courses that I spoke about. And we are now launching a STEPS Post podcast, which we have just started this year. It's me and two others who have quite a bit of experience with steps who kind of talk people through week by week. So what's it like to be particular here in the process? And this is the last one. And I'm through the whole presentation. I feel very proud of myself. Typically, I'm not the one doing this. I'm saying the stuff that I said at the other seminar and other people do this more logistical thing. I'm not a logistical guy. But here you go. I hope I have made it at least a little bit clear. The web page, the resources, and basically we as a STEPS ministry are here for people who want just to explore more. So there's no commitment. If you say, well, I'm not convinced yet, fine. But do you want another conversation or do you want to check out more? We are more than happy to just follow you on that journey, just to say that. Yes. This was my target. I wanted to do it a quarter before time, so there is time for Simon's comments and for Q&A. So, Simon?
Great. Thank you, Lars. I wanted to just share a couple of thoughts, really, because Pete Clayton, who leads the church in Torquay, I was chatting to him over lockdown, and he said, I've done this thing, and it's completely broken me. I'm like, oh. Sounds great. Tell me more. And so, like, that's why I got involved with STEPS. And so, and everything Lars has said is true. Like, it sounds too good to be true, right? Like, it's literally all free, and it's all just given to you, and it's incredibly easy, and that is genuinely true. I've not found the loophole in it yet, so, you know, I'm assuming it's still true. One of the things, the reason I started then doing STEPS in our church was because I used to be a primary school teacher, like I said, and then I came into church and I was sitting in our like pastoral forum kind of meetings, and we'd just talk about the same people all the time. And I was just like, what are we doing? This doesn't sound like Jesus is actually setting people free. It just sounds like they are depending on people working really, really hard. So I basically did steps with my list, and they're not on my list. Like, I don't talk about them anymore. Partly because I think what we've done and what STEPS helps us to do is just bring people to the Good Shepherd rather than like looking to me, and I'm not that great, but he really is. From my own experience, like just I kind of see STEPS as just an opportunity to spend a couple of hours with Jesus each week and let him press on the wounds that he wants to press on, and like, what better thing to do? What a joy. And at the same time, as I'm doing that, it is modelling what that looks like to just live like that to other people around me. And it's the easiest pastoral support I've ever done. Whilst also, you know, having a massive impact in me. I think one of the things that Lars has really helped me with is helping people to see how they, maybe if they're ready for steps, is to understand like the kind of the coping mechanisms that we put in place for periods of our life that like work for that moment, but then don't, they cannot bear the load of life for a long term. And so unhelpful behaviours that started off helpful, but then slowly become unhelpful over time. This has been a really, really helpful way of kind of leading, like, yeah, just dealing with those things. And then I think finally, the one thing I wanted to share was, one of the questions that was asked of Mike Reeves yesterday was, how do we as leaders kind of live vulnerably in front of other people without kind of just displaying our whole lives unhelpfully, potentially? I said to Lars earlier, like, what Lars brought, I thought, in his seminar this morning was basically like an hour's worth of application from everything Mike shared yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like Mike just kind of like pummeled our hearts with the gospel. So it's like now tender, and then this helps you to kind of go, okay, like this is something I could do with that. And like my fear of kind of doing this with church is you don't sit like, and you don't lead the course, you do the course. Mm-hmm. Like you are on steps as a person who needs help, and dealing with pride, that's a hard thing to do with your church because you're like, oh man, what if they see all the terrible sin that's in my heart? They see it anyway. Like in unhelpful ways. Mm-hmm. And this is a really helpful way. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, it's kind of on my terms how much I want to share, but at the same time, it's like it's just being honest and working with other people whilst they're also part of that process. And so it is a vulnerable place to be, but I think having a framework around it helps it to kind of be safe-ish. And I think my reality would be I've had fantastic experience in steps. I've also had moments when I've shared stuff in steps that have then, frankly, been then weaponized against me by people in that group. Mm-hmm. And that's caused us to have an opportunity to look at how the gospel applies to that. Mm-hmm. And for me to have to figure that out as well. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is in the midst of those things as well. And so, those would be the kind of the practicalities of what it actually looks like. Mm-hmm. And the fears I had about that. Maybe you've got others as well. So mm-hmm. Now's a good time for questions.
Yeah. Here, there, and there.
Guessing the threshold is going to be different to whether you're doing like a specific pastor's group that it sounds like Lars runs just for people in pastoral ministry. The limitations of that or the blessings of that, and you touched on it already, Si, but any other kind of recommendations?
Yeah.
Is it a good thing? Is it a good thing, but you need to bear this in mind?
Oh, definitely. And remember, everyone in the group decides themselves what they want to share. No one is forced to share anything in the group. You can actually just say pass if you don't want to say anything. What we typically say, and in a leadership context, is that we share scars, not wounds. So if I experience this is a bleeding wound right now, then I probably would do it in confidentiality. But if it's more like this is in a healing process and it's building on something that happened before, then I'm more free to share it in the group, if that makes sense. I am in recovery and that's what I'm sharing in the group. So there is a balance there, which also sometimes bit dependent on the group, to be honest. What I would say is we stress confidentiality. And it's how the group ends. It's by saying we remind people everything that's shared in the group is confidential. This is how we respect those who have spoken today. So that, and we have very few examples. So I have one or two examples over 18 years of where confidentiality is broken. So they are very few. the general feeling is we are all in the same boat. We are all at risk because we are, and therefore that kind of evens the playing field.
Yep. Just to say on that one, sorry to interrupt. I basically made the choice. I made the commitment to myself. I'm going to be brutally honest.
Yeah.
Have you heard of like the phrase vulnerability? Like fake vulnerability, basically.
Yeah.
Like where, I think you said it earlier, like where you share like a story
yes.
that's completely on your terms that makes you look like you're one of the people. Like, I just don't see Jesus do that anywhere.
No.
But at the same time, I do see him go off and talk to his father about stuff first.
Hmm.
And then he shared life with those around him. So I basically made the call. This is warts and all.
Yeah.
And I, even with challenging bits within it, haven't regretted that.
Hmm.
Maybe I will in the future. Who knows? But figure it out when we get to it. Sorry.
Thanks.
I'm sure there are people, both men and women, who would be completely comfortable in sharing anything in a mixed gender group.
Hmm.
But in my experience working with men. And my wife would echo this for women. If I got a couple of men struggling with something they would consider to be embarrassing, stick a couple of ladies in the group, they're going to clam up, or they probably wouldn't even come.
Mm.
Is it possible to run this as a single sex thing to facilitate more people joining and being free to share?
We typically do.
Yeah.
Whenever we can do single sex, we do single sex.
For that reason?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Lars, thank you for making the resources free. Do you have them in other languages, particularly Spanish, or do you have plans?
We have them in Danish. there's actually a French translation that she has just started to translate. So that is on its way. We have had questions about Spanish, but we haven't gone there yet.
We can translate it.
Brilliant. So what we say is, if they're wonderful.
Or we could use, even the AI stuff.
Yeah, yes, totally. Oh, 5 minutes already. Excellent. Just to say, we are very open for that. So talk to us if anyone, and we support it. So yeah. There and then. Yeah, you. I'm trying to remember. No, I don't. Well, we did one once in a community center, so we have done it, which was fine. But we have found that for these people who are motivated by need, it's not a big issue that it's happening in a church.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, many also traditional 12-step groups, they meet in churches because they have found that that is kind of a good place to meet.
So I work in an inpatient setting and some of them don't have to leave.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering whether it might be possible to do it in a setting if they're not allowed to leave.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have another place now where there's a church that works in particular with a local school, and they want to do it there, and we say, fine, we support you. So, yeah.
I was going to ask about really practical stuff. Have you got any insights into like optimum times, ways that course runs, i.e. in person or online, in a local church setting, evenings, weekends? I don't know, have you had any kind of insights from that, from local churches that you support?
The funny thing is that everything seems to work. So right now in Denmark we have a church who does it in person, all of it, and it's going really well. We have some churches who is doing everything online, it's going really well. We have some churches who are doing a hybrid, so they do some of it online and some of it in person, and it's going really well. So we don't have enough material yet to say this is absolutely the optimal model. It seems to be a bit dependent on the people running it, what they are comfortable with. So just that's what it is. Yeah.
We've done both. So we did it. So I did it originally online, and I quite liked it being contained in like a tiny screen. And like Lars says, you can just look off elsewhere. And now when I'm on Zoom calls in normal situations, I just look off into the distance. It's really good. And then we did it in person, which felt weird, but only because my context had been having done it online first. Everyone who did it in person first was like, I can never imagine doing this online.
Yeah.
Mm. So I think, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll back up what I said.
Did you deliver it to the whole church? Sorry, I jumped in.
No, so we, Lars came and spoke, and then we did the steps course off the back of that, and it was basically like an invitation thing, because I think my inclination would be not a whole church course,
right?
Because it's the kind of thing where you've got to be at that point where you're going, ugh, I need something, I need something here, and there are plenty of us probably in this room alone who are at that point. Multiply that by the number of people in the other room, and then like think about your church. There's definitely people who have things. Like, we all have things. It's just the level of whether we're willing to admit it or not. And that's kind of the first, like, it's the joke you make, right, about the first step. First step's admitting you've got a problem. It's true. Like, and that's when, for us in churches, when you're preaching the gospel, the work, that's, it's the Holy Spirit that does the work. So you're not, you never have to convince people of this stuff, because it's the Holy Spirit that's already doing it. He convicts. And presses on things and helps people to see this is where your area of need is. And so in that sense, like, yeah, I'd say just offer it and see what happens.
I'm just, that's the question. How did you offer that to church? How would I offer that to my church? So we've got a relatively small church, but we want to do something along the discipleship line with a wide range of people, as you would always expect.
So it's always stories that seems to attract people. So we have many videos and stories, so that's typically where a church then would start to kind of show them, or have Sai come and preach and tell his own story. Or we have a range also of pastors now who have gone through steps who could tell about it from a personal view.
So we need that first introductory thing that I think you mentioned early on. I'm not sure that I quite.
Which is also on film.
Right. So we could effectively show that to the church and invite and say, right, who would be interested in following this through?
Yes.
My suggestion, from a personal point of view, would be do it first. Like, try before you buy, kind of thing. Like, so on a personal level, you need to like buy in to a degree, like with anything, right? Like, I don't think anyone would just run the Alpha course having never looked at the material. So my suggestion would be like join one of the pastor's courses after Easter, or just any course. It's all the same material. That really, in a sense, it doesn't matter who you're doing it with. And then you can kind of go, do you know what, I'm not sure if this would work for everybody in our church. So there'll be people in our church who have said, do you know what, I'm not sure this is right for you right now. Because there has to be a level of self-motivation and commitment to it. And if you're dealing with something like, I don't know, fear of rejection or judging yourself without mercy or something like that, and you do this thing and it's not for you, you're just going to compound that feeling for someone. Here's another thing you couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a level of pastoral wisdom, I think, in who you suggest these things to.
Yeah, but just to say, it works in all. So we have found that it's not the size of the church that really matters. It's actually the leadership in terms of, we want to do this, and we will do it as well as we can. Not perfectly, but as well as we can. So I would agree with Sai also that if there is a possibility, it's definitely better to have tried it. Some of the key people or the pastor having tried the course themselves, so they kind of know this is what it's about. Mm. Then you also have your own story to share, which always helps, because they trust you, or they trust the people in the church more than, who's that stranger on the screen? How do I know that they speak the truth? But, well, they see you, they know you, right? Yeah.
Does the age group? Does that work?
Yeah. So from 18 to 90 is what we have experience with. Mm-hmm. We say that the group we have the most would be from 25 to probably 65. That's where we have the most. That's just how it's played out, really. Yeah. Sorry, the time is up. So I have to officially end the seminar now, but I can I hang around if anyone has questions for me? Huh? I can, right. Thank you so much for coming, and get in touch if you want to.